Good afternoon. I'd like to call Congress back to order. After a recess to speak with our legal counsel regarding a motion that was made prior to the recess, there was a motion to challenge the decision on ONCA 1805. Then there was a motion to amend, however, a motion to amend this challenge would not be in order to amend that. So the motion is to challenge the decision, the vote decision on ONCA 1805. So in speaking with our legal counsel, we did a little research, and on August 25th, 2017, on or about August 25th, 2017, prior to our CJO session in 2017, the clerk issued a parliamentarian opinion that we are a body of 12 members that have a fixed membership, and for that reason, it takes 7 votes to pass a bill. I had stated in session at that time that pursuant to the opinion of our parliamentarian that it takes 7 votes to pass legislation, which was a ruling from the chair, and Congress proceeded as such at that time. And then upon Congressman Shaw's departure, we requested another opinion from the parliamentarian on how many votes are required for the enactment of legislation with a vacant seat in the body, 6 or 7. And the opinion held the same as the previous opinion, and Congress proceeded as such at that time as well. So that is how we will proceed, and I do not believe that at the time the Attorney General was aware of the ruling that we had made. There's language discussing that in the opinion of the First Assistant Attorney General, but therefore it takes 7 votes, so the bills in question failed. Congressman Walker.
What was the last part of that statement?
It takes 7 votes, and therefore the bill 1805 failed. That's the one we are discussing right now. It was ONCA 1805.
It failed.
Yes, because of commentary that I just provided regarding the 2 previous opinions and the position that Congress took will stands. So it takes 7 votes, so it failed. Congressman Walker.
I just got confused by the commentary about the AGs. I don't know how that applied.
I was saying that he provided, the Assistant Attorney General provided language discussing our rule, and then also he was not aware of the ruling of Congress at that time, the position that we had held at that time, and or why.
I'm really having a dull moment.
Okay. Here,
but I still, you're saying that the opinion that we just got, he wasn't aware of something, which may have
The position why we held that, and we took the position of we requested a parliamentarian opinion, and the Congress moved forward as such in the previous CJO session, and then when we asked the question again in January upon Dr. Shaw's departure, we held that same position and proceeded as such, which we're going to continue to do at this time.
Okay, so does that prohibit any member of Congress from challenging that ruling? I mean, that's where we are.
Mr. Gill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, members of Congress. On that basis, yes, if you're challenging on the basis of it had 6 votes and you believe it should have passed, then yeah, you will fail in that challenge. I think one thing that might help your understanding is that the AG's opinion says that by congressional rule or speaker's ruling, we are allowed to determine ourselves as a fixed body of 12 members, requiring that 7 votes to pass legislation. And that's what the speaker is saying, is that we previously have determined, and she stated, pursuant to the opinion of the clerk, the parliamentarian, that it takes 7 votes to pass legislation. And so she's simply standing on that ruling. Oh, and that that was something that we don't believe the Attorney General was aware of when he made this rule, because he says, without such a congressional rule or speaker ruling. So he apparently was not aware that that had taken place.
Yeah, the language says without guidance in law or rule, this becomes a parliamentary question. And we have our answer and have proceeded as a Congress as such. Congresswoman Goodfox.
Well, I don't want to say that this is neither here nor there, because it actually is germane to the subject. And I don't think that there's anything that can be done right now, but I think that this needs to be revisited. And I will tell you why. I have some very strong concerns about the whole 7 people voting yes or no for a bill to pass or fail. We have had a Congress member resign within the last 3 months, and we have had a couple of Congress members who have been absent due to unforeseen circumstances on a regular occasion. And that may happen again very often in the future. And it's not intentional, but we still have to move on and have work to do. And I think that really can hinder this body with going with 7. I'm starting to really, the number of people here is the majority, and or make up what are, I know I get the whole 12 members, yes, but what are we gonna do if 3 people are sick and 1 person resigns? Then nothing passes? No, that's not, in my opinion, that's not the way to go. So like I said, I don't know that anything can be done right now, but the whole position of 7 people that needs to be here, I'm out on that one at this point. I don't know how we're gonna revisit it, if we can revisit it anytime soon, but in my opinion, that has really caused us some problems.
Right.
Because the vote count is 6-4. 6-4.
It is, but we have stood as a Congress. We move forward as such. We collectively made that decision at that time, and we can't adjust to who's not here that day. We move forward with that per constitutional language. Congressman Supernaw.
Is a parliamentary or parliamentarian's ruling the same as a congressional ruling? You said that was a parliamentarian's ruling, but did we vote on it? Did we accept that?
We did accept it as a Congress. There was an attempt to address it in the rules. However, there's discussion about that. The language in the rule is not exactly strong or clear or have the effect that I believe that some thought it would have at the time, which is why he moves on to say, without guidance in Osage Nation law or rule, this becomes a parliamentary question. And that's what we requested, that's what we got, and that's the position that Congress took twice since August 2017.
It just seems to me that the Constitution would prevail over our rules, and the Constitution says that the majority of the members.
Yes, and that's what I'm speaking to, is I guess everyone has a copy of it, but the opinion is based off of constitutional language. Shall be composed, in the composition of Congress shall be composed of 12 representatives according to the Osage Nation Constitution.
Could I ask the Trey, how we challenge that? Can we vote to challenge it?
Mr. Gill, challenge.
Members of Congress, I think what you're asking is to vote to challenge whether or not it should take 7 votes to pass legislation. Is that what you're asking?
No, yeah, but actually what I'm asking is I think 6 votes is the majority. And
right.
And on a challenge, you only have to have 2/3, and that is 6 votes of the members here. There's only 10 of us here.
You challenged the chair on that issue. She's made her ruling. I would have to converse with the parliamentarian to find out. I don't think that there's anything that happens after that. Okay, she's giving me a nod that no, there's not. It can be addressed in the rules, and the Attorney General has now given us an opinion that says we can address it in the rules. So we have the ability to make that determination within this body, whether it's 6, or whether it's 7, or whether it's 50% plus 1, you have the ability to make that decision and put it into the rules as a body.
And I'm just stating, that's a position that we took twice since August. And there's nothing that has changed that. And so the only, short of a new rule right now, then that's the standing. The only other option would be to reconsider, a motion to reconsider.
All right, I'd like to ask a question about that. Does that motion have to be made by the prevailing side or not?
No.
All right.
There is something stated in Robert's rules, but it doesn't trump our congressional rules, and there's no language stating so in our congressional rules.
Well, I'd like to make a motion that we reconsider that vote, just to give someone another chance to change the vote.
Okay, well, there's a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
Second.
Congresswoman Edwards.
Help me with this. Move to stay the vote on this motion pending vote on the remaining pieces of legislation.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Move to stay the vote and this issue pending vote on the remaining pieces of legislation on the agenda. We can come back to this after we get through with it.
Okay, that would not be in order at this moment, because there is a motion and a second to, I realize what you're trying to do, but there is a motion and a second to reconsider right now on the floor.
And what are we reconsidering?
We have to vote on the motion. Should we vote?
Okay, Congressman Supernaw, I realize we know what bill you're talking about, but because that was what began the discussion, but you need to be clear in your motion.
ONCA 1805 and ONCA 1821. Is that right?
Okay, Congressman Walker. ONCA 1805 and ONCA 1821. Is there a second?
Second. Yes.
John Maker seconded. Okay. Congressman Maker. Okay. Motion to reconsider on ONCA 1805 and ONCA 1821. Roll call.
Congressman Morris.
We're voting on 1805?
We are voting. There is a motion right now and a second to reconsider the vote on ONCA 1805 and ONCA 1821. So this voting yes or no would be your decision to vote on those again or let them stand as they are.
Yep.
Okay.
Congressman Supranoff?
Yes.
Congressman Walker?
Yes.
Congresswoman Whitehorn?
No.
Congresswoman Goodfox? Oh, sorry, Congresswoman Edwards?
No.
Congresswoman Goodfox?
Yes.
Congressman Hamilton?
Yes.
Congressman Maker?
Yes.
Congressman Norris?
Congressman Norris already voted.
Oh, I'm sorry, Congressman Mason?
Yes.
Did I call you?
No, just never called me.
Speaker Pratt?
No. The motion passes. Okay, I'm Congresswoman Edwards.
I'm still voting no. But you want to vote again, and if you, that's what
okay.
you want to do.
Okay, so the motion fails. I was notified that it passed first, but it takes 2/3. Part of the rules, a motion to reconsider takes 2/3 of the body. Therefore, the motion failed.
What was the vote count?
2/3
to
12 or 2/3
to
10?
7-2.
Well,
2/3 to 10, 6-7.
We need to check the rules to see if it has different language regarding the body or those present. For adoption, rule 6.213, for adoption, a motion to reconsider the final vote on a bill, resolution, or alternate effective date must receive a vote of 2/3 members of the Congress.
Boiled again.
That language was specific that time. Okay. We're voting on bill number ONCA 1827, an act to authorize and appropriate some of these committee reports were a little different. Okay, to authorize and appropriate $21,000 to the Capital Asset and Improvement Fund for the listed capital asset purchases and to establish an alternate effective date. Congressman Walker is the sponsor. How do you wish to proceed?
I'll reserve my time to close.
Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to speak for or against this bill? Seeing none, you have the floor.
Waive my time.
The question is, shall ONCA 1821 pass?
Congressman Supranoff?
Yes.
Congressman Walker?
Yes.
Congresswoman Whitehorn?
Yes.
Congresswoman Edwards?
Yes.
Congresswoman Goodfox?
Yes.
Congressman Hamilton?
Yes.
Congressman Maker?
Yes.
Congressman Mason?
Yes.
Congressman Norris?
Yes.
Speaker Pratt?
Yes. 1827 passes. There's an alternate effective date. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the alternate effective date say yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Any opposed say no. Alternate effective date passes and ONCA 1827 is advanced to enrollment. Next is ONCR 1812, a resolution to authorize and approve execution of a contract for treatment services or other integrated services sole source fiscal year 19 with the State of Oklahoma Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services, and to establish a limited waiver of sovereign immunity from suit and a consent to jurisdiction. I'm the sponsor, and I waive my time. Would anyone else like to speak for or against this resolution? Seeing none, the question is, shall ONCR 1812 pass?
Congressman Walker.
Yes.
Congresswoman Whitehorn.
Yes.
Congresswoman Edwards.
Yes.
Congresswoman Goodfox.
Yes.
Congressman Hamilton.
Yes.
Congressman Maker.
Yes.
Congressman Mason.
Yes.
Congressman Norris.
Yes.
Congressman Supernov.
Yes.
Speaker Pratt.
Yes. ONCR 1813 passes. 1812 passes. And is advanced to enrollment. ONCR 1813, a resolution of the Osage Nation Congress requesting the branches of the Osage Nation submit approved budgets as set forth in this resolution on or before July 5th, 2018. Congresswoman Edwards is the sponsor.
Wait one time.
The question, or is there anyone else who would like to speak for or against this resolution? Congressman Walker.
Kind of regretted not getting up and talking the other day when we approved the resolution that set the annual projected revenue for the upcoming fiscal year. I voted no for that. Any of you wondered why? It was because travel revenue was set at $46 million, which included a $40 million distribution from gaming. I think that kind of came out of the blue. I don't agree with that. I want to just point out that an affirmative vote on this means that we are submitting that there will be 0% or $0 appropriated next year for economic development, $0 for the permanent fund. There are I'll stop at that, but I just wanted to point out the other day that's why I voted no, because the $40 million distribution from gaming was included as part of that amount, and it's also listed in this. So I'll be voting no.
Okay, thank you. Congresswoman, you waived your time. Is this regarding debate or?
Well.
You can't.
I guess my question is when the statement's made.
You know, you can't speak to something that he just, in debate, you waived your time.
Okay.
So the question is, Congresswoman. The question is, shall ONCR 1813 pass?
Congresswoman Whitehorn.
Yes.
Congresswoman Edwards.
Yes.
Congresswoman Goodfox.
Yes.
Congressman Hamilton.
No.
Congressman Maker.
Yes.
Congressman Maker, she can't hear you clearly.
Yes.
Thank you. Congressman Mason.
No.
Congressman Norris.
No.
Congressman Supernov.
No.
Congressman Walker.
No.
Speaker Pratt.
Yes. Okay, the ONCR 1813 fails.
And what was the vote count?
5-5.
That mean that is this the Constitution vote? No.
But I do want the journal to reflect that I object to the fact that I'm not allowed to vote, please.
Okay. I had to clarify whether we received a communication from the assistant chief or not, because I was under the understanding that he was not going to vote in the event of a tie because he's acting chief today.
I agree.
No, I do not agree.
So, I didn't ask if you agreed. I said I was checking to see if you'd sent a previous communication stating that that would be your position today. Okay, so there's a... Okay, so
just asking the general to reflect that I object because I was not allowed to vote. That's all I'm asking.
Congresswoman Whitehorn.
Move to reconsider the vote.
There's a motion on the floor to Congresswoman Edwards.
Request that the assistant principal chief state on the record whether he is acting principal chief today.
Yes.
Okay. That's all.
Okay. All right. 18, 13. Okay. We are at the end of our agenda. We have a few things. Congresswoman Edwards.
We have some more things to do. I was going to move to adjourn the session.
No, we do have a few things to take care of on our agenda. We have a confirmation. Okay, we have added to the agenda. For confirmation, we have Jim Paris, appointee to the Osage LLC for a term of, I'm going to say, 3 years. Because it doesn't have language here. So for a term of 3 years to the Osage LLC. Any discussion? Seeing none, roll call. This is to appoint, this is on the appointment of Jim Paris to the Osage LLC.
Congresswoman Edwards.
Abstain.
Congresswoman Goodfox.
No.
Congressman Hamilton.
No.
Congressman Maker.
Yes.
Congressman Mason.
Yes.
Congressman Norris.
Yes.
Congressman Supernov.
Yes.
Congressman Walker.
No.
Congresswoman Whitehorn.
Abstain.
Speaker Pratt.
No. Okay, the confirmation for Jim Paris fails.
What's the vote?
4-4 is the vote.
I again ask that the journal reflect that I object to the fact that I was not allowed to vote. Please.
And I request that it also reflect for this vote that the assistant chief is the acting chief today for this vote. Okay, next is Belle Wilson.
To confirm.
Yeah, she's already on the agenda for confirmation. Okay, so move.
Sorry if it's not necessary. Then.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Congresswoman Goodfox.
Abstain.
Congressman Hamilton.
Yes.
Congressman Maker.
Point of order. Could you repeat again? What we're voting for?
We are voting on Belle Wilson's appointment to the Osage Nation Election Board. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Congressman Mason?
Yes.
Congressman Norris?
Yes.
Congressman Supernov?
Yes.
Congressman Walker?
Yes.
Congresswoman Whitehorn?
Yes.
Congresswoman Edwards?
Yes.
Speaker Pratt?
Yes. Okay, Belle Wilson has been appointed to the Osage Nation Election Board. Congresswoman Goodfox.
I also have this.
Okay. Great.
So 4 years ago, we had two of our colleagues that we knew were going to be with certainty leaving us, and Congresswoman Edwards had honored them with a citation, and I thought that was really nice because we knew that they weren't going to be with us anymore. And so I thought about Congressman Hamilton and Congressman Norris, and I wanted to do the same for them. And you heard me say today, these seats are really difficult to sit in sometimes, and I think today we might have pushed it to the limit. And we were kind of all over the place, but we're, how I've always felt since I've sat in my seat is we're a family, we're a branch of government, and we may not always see eye to eye, and we may have some really bad days, but there are good days too. And I really truly believe from my heart that every single person that even puts their name in the hat to run for an elected position in government, in tribal government specifically, that they're doing it because they want to serve their people and they're already leaders. And so with that being said, I'd like to present a citation of commendation for Congressman James Norris. Whereas Congressman Norris has dedicated 4 years of service to the Osage Nation and its people as a member of the Osage Nation Congress, and whereas Congressman Norris has consistently dedicated himself to the effective representation of the Osage people throughout his tenure in the Osage Nation Congress, and whereas Congressman Norris has made sacrifices in his personal life to serve on the Osage Nation Congress in his retirement years, and whereas Congressman Norris has provided the Osage Nation Congress with wisdom regarding events that have shaped the growth of the Osage Nation government, and whereas Congressman Norris has earned the admiration and respect of his colleagues for his leadership, dedication, and years of service to the Osage Nation Congress. Now, therefore, pursuant to the motion of Congresswoman Alice Goodfox, the Osage Nation Congress extends to Congressman James Norris sincere commendation and directs that this citation be presented.
I have to admit, thank you all. I have to admit, a little over 4 years ago, it was quite a decision for me to make to step into your shoes and sit on this Congress. Whenever, back in 2005, when we were writing the Constitution, we had many questions, and we reached out to the Osage people. And we wanted to put together a form of government, a constitution that everybody could live under. And we knew at the time that it was not a perfect document. And you've heard government reform commissioners say over and over again, this is not a perfect document, and over time it's going to change. We tried to put together the skeleton, and we relied on Congress and Congresses that'll come after you to improve on this document. And it has been a real pleasure serving with each and every one of you. And I got to know some of you very, very well. And I'll hold each one of you dear in my heart. And I appreciate everything you've done for me, and I don't want to get real emotional here, but I thank you for your leadership, your guidance, and your tolerance throughout my 4 years. Thank you.
Congress is retiring and Congressman Hamilton is running for higher office. I'd like to present this citation of commendation to Congressman Otto Hamilton. Whereas Congressman Hamilton has dedicated 4 years in service to the Osage Nation and its people as a member of the Osage Nation Congress. And whereas Congressman Hamilton has consistently dedicated himself to the effective representation of the Osage people throughout his tenure of the Osage Nation Congress. And whereas Congressman Hamilton has made sacrifices in his personal life to serve as the second speaker of the Osage Nation Congress for 2 consecutive years, 2015 and 2016. And whereas Congressman Hamilton has provided the Osage Nation Congress with remarkable leadership through events that have shaped the growth of the Osage Nation government. And whereas Congressman Hamilton has earned the admiration and respect of his colleagues for his leadership, dedication, and years of service to the Osage Nation Congress. Now therefore, pursuant to the motion of Congresswoman Alice Goodfox, the Osage Nation Congress extends to Congressman Otto Hamilton sincere commendation and directs that this citation be presented.
Thank you. I didn't know this was going to occur today, and I really was hoping Jim Norris wouldn't say anything. As it may be, I should say, 4 years ago when I got on elected to Congress, I was thinking, man, I'm the youngest one on there. What am I going to, how is this going to go? And now I can tell you I feel like I've aged about 15 years. In a good way, in wisdom. I'd like to thank the staff. It was really, sure. Each and every one of you really helped hit the ground running. It's almost a new staff now since I think Shanna was here. Mm-hmm. And Shanna, you helped me out a lot. It was the very first time, and I know I've made a lot of mistakes. So. And now we got a new staff, and I think you guys are doing an awesome job. You guys are here late at night, and I drive by, I see lights on, and you guys are all here. I think it's been quite an ordeal, something I'll never forget. And Congressman Norris, appreciate each and every one of you. And we are a unique body here, and we are, you know, we look at things different. And it's these 10-hour days that you have to look at things different. You know, and it's not for everyone. So. Just thank you for helping me out and being a part of you guys. So, thanks.
Just in closing, Congressman Red Eagle always said something, and it always stuck with me, that you are forever Osage Nation Congressman. And you know, I often address former congressmen that are no longer, and women that are no longer with us as Congress people, because you are forever leaders of the Osage Nation. So with that, I'd like to move that the citations be, I don't know, issued. Thank you.
Second.
All those in favor say yes.
Yes. Yes.
Congresswoman Edwards.
As Vice Chair of Rules and Ethics, I've been asked to present the following proposed rule changes to the Congress for consideration. You have this from yesterday. The first amendment I'm going to read, I'm going to try the easier ones and then see if we can get the harder ones. Amendment to Rule 9.1.2 in the latest version of the rules, which would be at page 53, line 684, strike 10 a.m. and insert 9 a.m.
You're looking for a second.
Mm-hmm.
No way.
Okay, that was the first motion. And so the motion dies for a lack of second.
The second rule is proposed rule change is page 53, line 688. Insert a number 3. On Mondays and Thursdays of each legislative day, session shall begin at 5 p.m. Interestingly enough, these suggestions came from some of the Congress members that are sitting here.
Page 53, line 688, insert number 3, on Mondays and Thursdays of each legislative day, session shall begin at 5 p.m.
The next proposal.
Motion dies for lack of second.
The next proposed amendment is Rule 4.3, page 11, line 18, after floor, strike privileges limited to members and insert protocol. Insert a number 1 before no, and then insert a number 2. No cell phone use or texting by members is allowed in the chambers during daily congressional sessions. No cell phones are allowed to be out in the congressional chambers during any executive session.
Second. Amendment number 4 is made. A second of discussion. Congressman Walker.
I understand the idea or the spirit of the proposed rule change, but we're all adults. It's 2018. I mean, this is part of what we do. These are little handheld computers. They have our emails. They have our, we access legislation. I regularly look at mine for agendas. It's on my calendar. It helps me. It's a tool that I use. Can I sit here and say that I don't ever receive or send text messages? No, I can't say that, but I can't support this rule. This is not 1987. This is 2018, and this is part of what we do, how we operate.
Congresswoman Edwards.
I'll just tell you, the discussion in the Rules and Ethics Committee was that every one of the members is assigned either a laptop computer or an iPad, and that the nation pays for that in whole or in part, and that it's not appropriate to be texting during session, and particularly not during executive session, and that there are many instances in executive session where cell phones have been out and been in use, particularly for texting. And that, frankly, there doesn't need to be, to do what you've said, Congressman Walker, there doesn't need to be texting. So the rule that as proposed is to not use your cell phone, talking, or texting. It doesn't say that you're not to use your phone for reference to legislation or anything else you need to research. It just makes the point that you're not supposed to be talking or texting during the congressional session. And then the other complaint was that, you know, to keep everything confidential as we're supposed to, that the cell phones need to be put away in chambers during executive session.
Okay. Congresswoman Goodfox.
Well, I'm not aware of anything that has come out of executive session because someone's sitting there recording their I'm not aware of anything, so, but I've been in executive session and I've been in committee of a whole where we've asked the assistant principal chief to get on his phone and find out from the chief what his opinion is or what his stance is or what direction they're going, or so on more than one occasion we have asked him to do that. In executive session and committee of a whole, during the regular session, and so then what? It serves our purpose then, but any other time we don't want to. I'm not gonna vote for this. I agree with everything that Congressman Walker said.
Congressman Edwards.
Well, the response to that is I believe that the assistant principal chief steps out, makes his calls, and that's certainly appropriate. That this would not impact his ability to do that, his or her ability. So anyway. That's just what the proposed rule was, and I'm the messenger.
Excuse me, Congressman Walker.
Just very briefly, one closing comment. I think it would be more disruptive for for me to get up out of my seat and go out to take a text message or respond to a text message from one of my four school-aged children or a call from my 94-year-old grandmother. Like I said, this is 2018. This is part of our life. We're adults and act like one.
Congresswoman Edwards?
It's not allowed in any court of law or congressional chambers of the state or the United States. Or so. Just a point now. Well, including our own trial court and Supreme Court.
Congresswoman Whitehorn?
Although sometimes I think that we're too dependent on our electronic devices all the way around, I know that sometimes there's a need, a necessity to use them. I like what I've witnessed at other board meetings where there's announcement made, especially during going into executive session by the chair, to please put your cell phones away, they aren't allowed on the table. And to me, if you're going to be sitting in that committee meeting, the chair is in control of the meeting and you need to do what the chair says. Also, I think our speaker has the ability to tell you to put your devices away, put them in your pocket, don't text. So I think the speaker has the ability to set that tone at the table. I believe that a chair of the committee has the ability to set that tone at the table. And I believe that our members of Congress should comply with whatever the wishes of the chair is, should one want to prohibit electronic telephones, texting, whatever at their table. So I'll probably leave that note for this.
Congresswoman Edwards.
So is the consensus that I take this back to the Rules Committee and ask them to write a rule that gives authority to the chair or the speaker to ask members to put their phones away and not text during committee meetings or session?
I think that they have that.
Congresswoman Whitehorn?
I think that authority already exists.
Call for the question.
I believe that. Okay. Well, I wanted to provide some, but there's a call for the question. All those in favor to vote, say yes.
Yes.
Yes. Any opposed, say no. Okay. All those in favor of motion. Rule number 4, say yes.
Yes.
Yes. Oh. That was wrong.
All those in favor say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed say no.
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 Okay, so there was one yes from Congresswoman Edwards.
Well, I think you better call for a vote because I think
I said heard, yes.
There's two.
All right.
That's fine.
Well, I just heard one at the beginning, so raise your hand if you were a yes. Congressman Maker and Congresswoman Edwards. Yes. Okay, let the record reflect that, please. All right.
One more. Rule 7.12, strike rule 7.12 and insert. Standing committees may meet during session at the following assigned times in the congressional chambers. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 1 to 2:50 p.m. government operations, 3 to 5 p.m. commerce, gaming and land. Tuesdays and Thursdays, 1 to 2:50 p.m. health and social services. Tuesdays, 3 to 5, education. Thursdays, 3 to 5, culture. These times may be shortened but may not be extended. Other meeting times shall be by notice posted on the official calendar by the clerk. Number 2, standing and select committees are encouraged to hold monthly meetings in the interim on the second Tuesday of each month.
Second.
Discussion? Congressman Walker.
I'm going to vote no on this one as well. I'm not trying to be contrary or vote no because Congresswoman Edwards is proposing it.
I'm not proposing it.
I know, but I'm just saying. To me, this almost, well, I'm not going to impugn motive. This would need to be done if there were issues and problems with getting committee meetings set. Government Operations Committee typically has the biggest load, and I know Congresswoman Edwards is going to say this would allow for another committee chair to cancel their meeting and allow GovOps to get into that. We've worked through this session. We processed all of the legislation. There are reasons why some meetings are set at IFS or at 8:30 or 3:30, because sometimes the director of a program, the enterprise chairman or whatever, is available at different times of the day. I think this is unnecessary, and we've not had major issues with not being able to process legislation because we're not able to work together. This is unnecessary. The encouragement of interim committee meetings, okay. Well, that's an encouragement.
Congresswoman Goodfox.
Well, I am going to support this to see how, well, I don't even know that we'll use it. This Congress will use it unless we go into a special session. But I will say this, there are pros and cons to everything we're voting on, everything. One of the pros of doing something like this is, you know, as a second speaker, I get a lot of the complaints that the constituents have, and I think that they think that it goes through congressional affairs. And I'm very, you know, quick to tell them, no, that's a rules and ethics issue, but I will let the rules and ethics committee know, or one person off of the rules and ethics committee know, and they can address it. We have had an extreme amount of criticism this session on two things: meetings starting late and going late. And the people that elect us to sit in these seats have every right to complain about it. If they see a meeting posted, a public meeting, and there's something on the agenda that they want to hear about, and they're not able to be here, but they're able to listen in, and we don't start until 15, 20 minutes, 25 minutes after the meeting time is posted, they're constantly having to get on their computer, check to see what's going on. And so sometimes y'all want to know why I'm getting texts. I got four today, four from constituents that say, what's going on? How come you guys aren't on the air? Then I have to run over to executive and say, our clerk or Eli, and say, is the audio working? What's going on? And we come to find out, you know, we're not on. And I'm back there running to see if we've even started the meeting, and we haven't. And that's why we're not on. So I'm texting the constituent back saying, no, we haven't started yet. Sorry, we're 20 minutes late. Or we say we want to be transparent. A part of transparency is not just telling people what we're doing. It's posting a meeting to the public with advance notice, with our agenda, with advance notice, so that people can see it, and it's sticking to our times that we've said. That's also a part of transparency. So I think that this rule change of allowing for our constituents to know when these meetings, if they have a special interest in commerce or health, they'll always know when it is, and we should, most importantly, we should stick to the meeting times. We should try our best to start on time and end on time. Because if one committee goes late, then that pushes the next committee late too. And in the years that I've been here, we used to kind of be bad at it. We've gotten really bad at it. It's really bad now. So for what that's worth, I'll be supporting this.
Congresswoman Edwards.
The reason it did come up is because the Rules Committee got numerous complaints. And I will say this, I've seen a whole group of our Gaming Enterprise Board officials sitting back here waiting hours to have a meeting start because another meeting went over. And this session, when we have an IFS meeting that has legislation on it, I had to call and scramble in the middle of a meeting that was an important meeting. It was a committee of the whole in executive session, and it was important. But I had to go out and miss part of the meeting and call a woman that was very busy, was a busy person, and a judge, and say, we're not going to, I'm sorry, I know you've been sitting around for an hour waiting on this, but it's not going to happen. So to me, having these times, you can have other times, but to me, having these times and being able to say to the world, this is when we're going to meet, and being able to connect with the clinic personnel that need to come to health, the gaming personnel that need to come to gaming, and other people that we need, and they can look and rely on these times, is important for us. It's a good process.
Congresswoman Whitehorn?
I have a couple of things. I support set meeting times. When I was speaker, I set a schedule of when meetings were going to be held so we could stick to it so our staff could have lunch. My question is I know that you had some begin times for session. Are those in any way going to interfere with these amendments that you have here?
No.
And also, I know that at one point this failed because some committee chair didn't like the time his committee was going to meet. I don't see any provision for appropriation to meet in there unless somebody cancels their meeting. And sometimes we need to meet and have a regular meeting time. So do you have a solution to that problem? Because I can work around people's schedules, but sometimes we do need a set amount of meeting space, and I'm not seeing it there.
None of the standing committees, I mean, these are only standing committees, none of the select committees. There is nothing scheduled for the morning, and there's nothing scheduled after 5 p.m. And it also states that you can shorten the meetings, and you can pick other meeting times, and you can cancel meetings.
So basically, I would have to, chairs of select committees would have to go around and talk to other chairs to see if they might give them meeting time, or meet at 8 o'clock in the morning, or meet after 5 o'clock.
Well, meet in the morning, or meet after session, or meet after 5 o'clock, or take other times. I mean, I canceled 3 meetings, and that time freed up.
Well, I know we needed,
but I couldn't give you any more time. That was, yeah. I needed all my other time.
All right, Congresswoman Whitehorn has the floor.
Sure. So I'm going to support this amendment because I think it is important to have scheduled meetings. But just as we finish out, and as I'm a chair of a select committee, I just would hope that the chairs of standing committees would work with me to get some meeting time because there's none scheduled here. But I'm going to support this.
I'll try 9 o'clock again.
I wanted to, because it's not in the rules, but we have kind of been operating as it was sort of an unspoken rule that we did for ourselves, was for the select committees to take IFS times, and that seems to be going okay and working all right, and except for some, because it's not written, some decided that they, standing committees decided that they would take IFS. So that's not in here, but I'm just stating that that seems to be going okay. I like it. Congressman Walker.
Well, I don't. A lot of the comments that were stated earlier in debate, I don't think really apply. I mean, we have to post our meetings 48 hours in advance. It's the constituents know when our meetings are gonna happen. Just because GovOps meets on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at a certain time, that doesn't mean that the meeting's gonna start exactly at 1 and can't go any past 5 any different than it was before, or whatever the time it was. The constituents know when our meetings are going to be, and they know what's going to be on the agenda. You don't suspend the rules, modify the agenda, and throw legislation on committee meetings. This just boxes us in unnecessarily, and is trying to fix something that's not broken.
Thank you.
Congresswoman Goodfox?
I disagree that it's not broken, but I will tell you this, Congressman Walker, when Congresswoman Whitehorn made that, when she implemented that a few years ago, I was totally against it, didn't want it, complained about it, griped about it, blah, blah, blah. But it worked. And we did have less meetings that started late or ran over. It worked. It was less chaotic. It was, if you ask the staff, they liked it. It worked for them. They were structured. They were able to have lunch. They were able to, it just worked. It was very structured. And I know they liked it. Call for the question.
Okay, there's a call for the question. All those in favor say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed say no. Okay. We will now vote on Rule 7.12. I guess this is, I don't know what rule this is.
That's it.
It says amendment number one. Okay. Roll call, please.
Congressman Hamilton.
Yes.
Congressman Maker.
Yes.
Congressman Mason.
No.
Congressman Norris.
No.
Congressman Supermont.
Yes.
Congressman Walker.
No.
Congresswoman Whitehorn.
Yes.
Congresswoman Edwards.
Yes.
Congresswoman Goodfox.
Yes.
Speaker Pratt.
Yes. Okay, the rule passes. Okay. Oh, Congressman Hamilton.
Chair of Education, I make a motion for Speaker to approve signature on graduate accommodations for the following Osage students. Are you guys ready? Sabra Comet, Master of Science. Mason Powell, Bachelor of Arts. Rebecca Horsechief, Master of Legal Studies. Taryn Welch, Bachelor of Science. Rachel Smith, Bachelor of Science. Jonah Sanford, Master of Arts. Morgan Leipzig, Bachelor of Arts. Angela Iproth Lindsay, Master of Education. Sophia Smith, Bachelor of Science. Lindsay Davis, Bachelor of Science. Dixie Gunzelman, Master of Science. Sydney Garcia, Bachelor of Arts. Veronica Redding, Bachelor of Arts. Sasha Fields, Associate of Arts. Marcia Whitaker, Bachelor of Science. William Burkhead, Bachelor of Business Administration. Bridget Rogers, Associate of Science. Madison Admali, Bachelor of Science. Jay Drummond, Master of Social Work. Roman Gary, Bachelor of Science. Chelsea Pease Engle, Bachelor of Science. Emily St. John, Bachelor of Science. Stephen Moore, Bachelor of Music. Stephen Moore, Bachelor of Science. Gannon Tarian, Bachelor of Arts. Jamie Powell, Doctor of Philosophy. Ashley Mitchell, Bachelor of Science. Siley Maroney, Bachelor of Science. Zachary Mishner, Bachelor of Arts. Tyler Rhodes, Bachelor of Arts. Gail Avery, Bachelor of Science. Robert Glavin III, Bachelor of Science. Heather Tisdale, Bachelor of Science. Lewis Gray, Bachelor of Science. Jessica Hudson Walker, Bachelor of Science. Ashton Palmer, Bachelor of Science. Andrea Kimball, Bachelor of Science. Sarah St. John, Bachelor of Business Administration. Kelly Benthian, Master of Arts. Hayden Fox, Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine. Tyler Bird, Bachelor of Arts. Corey Gray, Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine. Dana Spike, Doctor of Philosophy. Karen Smith Crawford, Bachelor of Science. Shane Watkins, Associate of Applied Science. Courtney Yarbrough Woodley, Bachelor of Science. Brittany Smith, Bachelor of Science. Alexis Haynes, Juris Doctorate. Kathleen Thiel, Master of Public Health. Jay Sando, Bachelor of Science. Molly Min, Bachelor of Science. Audrey Merkel, Bachelor of Arts. Genevieve Del Castillo Conway, Bachelor of Science. Lily Mullen, Bachelor of Science. Brill Bryan, Doctor of Philosophy. Olivia Glavin, Bachelor of Fine Arts. Ariel Nicholson, Associate of Applied Arts. Ariel Nicholson, Associate of Applied Science.
Second. All those in favor say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed say no. Congratulations. Congress, I will now give the speaker's end of session report.
I would like to say again congratulations and to Congressman Hamilton and Congressman Norris. And I try really hard not to get emotional, but I'm a very sentimental person. And because I almost wore the same dress that I wore the day I was of inauguration 4 years ago, because this could possibly be my last time a session if we don't come in for a special session as well. So it's just emotional. We all become very, you know, close and spend a lot of time together, get to know each other very well. So I wish you both the best in, you know, your future endeavors, and best wishes to your family. Okay, we began session in the general fund of the Treasury with $1,503,859, and the Economic Development Fund, $1,100,000. For starting funds available, $2,603,859. We had 43 bills and 16 resolutions to consider, and of those 16 appropriation bills were considered for a total request of $4,992,861. We held 41 meetings, 26 standing and 15 select. If everything is signed as passed, the total appropriated amount from the General Treasury would be $1,307,861, and from the Economic Development Fund, $250,000. So the amounts remaining of the General Treasury would be $195,998, and the Economic Development Fund, $850,000. We confirmed 5 appointees. For the record, earlier I stated to ask the Journal to reflect that the Assistant Chief is acting Chief today. However, I just wanted to state, and possibly for those listening, that because Congress has taken the position of the 7-vote matter to pass the bill, when there's a 4-4 split, if the Assistant Chief were to vote, that would not have an effect on the passage of the bill. So I just wanted to explain that, because I'm not necessarily disagreeing with the language, but when Assistant Chief says that it was refused to vote on a tie, that's why, that vote does not happen, because it wouldn't have an effect. That is the end of the report on the amounts and totals. So I would just like to say again, I guess, see you guys later.
Move to adjourn the session.
Second.
Okay, all those in favor say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed say no. The
we'll be in a special session.
Conference session is adjourned.
I'll just say the fifth.
Are we up there, Don?
And they moved the pause. Bills didn't pass.